Let's get started. So, benefit to the people who listen live, we always have such fun music. We never know what it's going to be that's leading into our show. And so I was rocking out. I don't know if our guests were, but I was definitely doing a little chair dancing. Welcome. So excited to start on this chilly day. Welcome to the Aging Well Together show. I am so excited. I know I always say that, but I'm a very excitable person. And I'm so excited for today's show as I have wonderful new colleagues. We met in the hallway of the Carolina Inn at an event. We have Zach Sunderland and Drew Helm are with us today. They are the co-founders of Haven Design and Build. It's an architecture and construction company in Durham, and we're going to talk all about design and construction when it comes to housing trends and the aging space. We were having fun just a few minutes ago being like, how should we describe what we're going to talk about? But so excited for all we're going to learn together. But as always, before we dive into our show, I want to give a shout out to WCOM LP Chapel Hill Carrboro on 103.5 FM for hosting our weekly Aging Well Together show. The Aging Well Together show is brought to you by the always helpful and festive team at the Orange County Department on Aging. Please join us each week as we interview special guests to share information, resources, insights, and stories about the opportunity. You can catch us live every Thursday from 2 to 3, and it's fun because then you get to hear the opening music, and you never know the even opening before our opening music. But you can also listen to any of our previous shows, aka our podcast. This is show number 62. You can listen to any of them through the Orange County Department on Aging's website, which is www.orangecountync.gov/aging. And on the website, you can find links to our Aging Well Together radio show, as well as a host of other helpful resources about services in Orange County, North Carolina. If you have questions about any of the resources we discuss on the shows, or if you want to suggest a topic for an upcoming show, and please do. I know I've been saying this lately, but we are busy putting together our 2025 season, so let us know if there's something or someone you want to hear more about. Let us know, and you can do that either by calling the Department on Aging, and this number is also just their general resources line, so this is a good number to have. Keep it near you, 919-968-2070, or feel free to email me at, and it's all one word, agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com, agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com. Okay, so a quick shout out to the Carrboro bass band, the Robert Bradford Quartet, for allowing us to use their great music for our opening and closing music. And look who just came in the door. Hello, Alicia Reed.
Hey, Heather, and guests.
I know, Alicia hasn't even... Alicia, that's Zach. Alicia, this is Drew.
Yeah, in the house.
They are in the house, in our chilly... chilly house. I am
We're dressed warm.
Yeah, I know, and I'm dressed appropriately. We're gonna have. I got an offline lecture last week that I was not wearing enough clothes for this chilly studio, and I have listened to my friend, my co-host, my mentor, one of the fabulous wellness instructors at the Orange
She's
County
so
Department
good.
On Aging, and the host of Afternoon Talk with Alicia that starts right here at 3 o'clock, right when we end. So Alicia Reed is with us. Hello,
friend. Hello, everyone. I'm glad to be here and with the guys here. I can't wait.
I know.
I feel like I'm on one of those shows. You know,
we are on a show. We're like literally on a show.
I mean, the one where they're getting ready to tell us to tear the house down and they're going to.
Oh, I know. That's right.
That show. Yeah.
It does kind of look like that.
Yeah.
We do need a makeover, which we're getting a makeover of our studio for those. You know what? I haven't done a shout out about this, but we are changing. Our WCOM is getting a new home.
Oh, that's right.
We are moving to the new Carrboro Library building. I know that there's all kinds of fundraising going on. If people want to help contribute to that, you can go to the WCOM.org website to help with that. Okay, real quick.
But if I want to, if Heather and I would like our homes just redone in a day, how long did it take them? Like 3 days to do it? You could do it.
Just like that.
You know what, Alicia? We have a whole show to talk to them. That should be a great question. Yeah. What's the turnaround? Yeah. We'll keep. All right. I'm just going to finish up by my own little spiel, which is I am Heather Altman. I am your crazy host for over 25 years. I've worked in aging services and supports. I help older adults and their families connect with resources in our community. I realize I did tours this morning. I realize I'm still wearing my name tag.
That's so cool, isn't it?
Do I look hip? I have a little name tag. So cool. I wore a name tag at the retirement community where I worked for many, many years, but this is like shinier and magnetic.
Special.
I walked into my family when I first brought it. They're like, oh, that's, I don't know, there's something about wearing a name tag. They're like, oh, that's funny. Anywho, but it does say who I am. I'm Heather. I'm also a caregiver for older family members. And at 54, I am focusing on my own changing needs, so I am super invested in how we are all aging well together, and I am super invested in this topic. This is a topic I care a lot about professionally and personally with the folks in my world. As I always say, you love your home, does your home love you back? And so I am so thrilled. We have great guests. We have Zach Sunderland. Am I saying it right, Sunderland?
Perfect.
Yay. And Drew Helm. Am I saying that right?
Got it.
Excellent. They are the co-founders. It's Haven, right? Am I not saying that right? Okay, good.
Perfect.
Of Haven. So funny. I'm going to do a quick tangent. Yesterday, I was with a sweet teenager in my car, and someone wanted to know, I was picking them up, are you coming in an SUV? And I said, no, we're coming in a sedan. And they were like, okay, S-U-D-A-N. I'm like, no, that's Sudan. That's a country. So there's a fun ADHD tangent on words and pronunciation. But okay, they are the co-founders of Haven Design and Build. I add an and. Is it Haven Design Build?
Yes.
Yeah.
Haven Design Build.
It's like a thing. I know that's like speak. Like design build is a term. And I realize I just said that. So it's Haven Design Build. I'm going to let you guys talk in a second. They're an architecture and construction company in Durham. They work across North Carolina on residential projects of any scale, from accessory dwelling units, and we will have them define what that means, and new homes to townhomes and apartment buildings. Zach is a licensed architect and general contractor, and Drew is the CFO, Chief Financial Officer. We try not to do too many initials here, with a background in finance and real estate. I will say, Drew, we're super excited to have you here. Zach, you have the privilege, the honor of being the first architect and general. You're the first architect we've had on the show. We've had a general.
Contractor.
Nor was here. It was a general contractor, too, I think. Okay. Anyway, so excited to have you all. Welcome, Zach and Drew.
Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here. An absolute pleasure.
Poor Alicia. They're not prepared for us in the sense, like, we're crazy. All right.
We better give them a drink and adult beverage or something.
Before that doesn't happen at the station until later.
Until afternoon talk with Alicia.
Yeah. Okay. So before we get into all kinds of design build questions, first, each of you take a moment. Tell us about you. Where are you from? What got you into the design build world? So I'll go to Zach first.
Perfect. Yeah, I'm happy to be here. Really, thank you for the opportunity to get to talk to your audience. So, as mentioned, I'm an architect by trade, also a general contractor, and I sort of have a wavering path across many different places. So, born in Kansas, Fort Riley, Kansas. Grew up in.
Right. We've talked about it, and Zach and I have spent some time together. Also, Okay, go on.
You have the advantage here because you've heard a bit more than Alicia has, and you've not heard much from Drew. So at risk of repeating myself.
No, don't worry about it. That's why you have a microphone to share with others.
There you go. Made my way through Denver, Colorado, Aurora, to be specific, and then high school and college in Iowa. So undergrad at Iowa State University. That's actually where Drew and I met, architecture school there. And then made our way out here. I'd love to say it's because the people drew us in, but it's the weather, as you can imagine.
That's why we are all, those of us that are not from, I'm from Boston. Yeah, that's exactly why we are here.
Now, I'm glad I'm here. The people are great, but it's the weather that drew me in. The mountains, the ocean, that certainly helps. But moved out here in 2015. Actually, Drew and I moved here together to start this business together. And so... Wow. We moved to Raleigh, ended up deciding that Durham was a good home for the business and founded the firm in 2016 together with the intent of, with our mission being creating housing options for underserved communities. And so we can talk more about that. But Knowing that we wanted to get into housing specifically and affordable housing at that, that's when I got my GC license to kind of complement those architecture.
Your GC, your general contractor.
Thank you. My general contractor license. So I had done some construction before getting into architecture, and so just kind of came full circle to that. And so I'm a huge building nerd, as you'll probably hear a little bit more about later.
Excellent.
And yeah, I'm the kind of person who, you know, goes to a museum for the building.
Yes.
And that is 100% true. That is not a joke.
You want to see the build. You want to, well, that's like, isn't Spain known for like the Gaudi, like going to places to actually see the architecture and the building, like. Forget the content inside. Mm-hmm. You want to see the building.
Who cares about paintings? You know what I mean?
Well, full disclosure, I'm this kind of person. I only go to museums because I like the museum store. I like art and I have the potential of buying. I don't want to see a bunch of stuff I can't have or can't afford. Sure. Like, it's not as fun for me. So I'm down with that as well. So building nerds,
I like just stand there and just stare.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I think most people are that way. I think maybe Heather and I are the outliers here. But if you know an architect, they probably go to museums for the building. Or libraries. For sure. They're not going for the books. They're going for the building.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I was just at the Durham Public Library. That's a neat space.
Like
seeing it. And as I'm excited for our new Carborough Library, though, I don't know. Well, it's a building. I mean, it doesn't have like these funky, fancy.
No pillars. No cut inlays or nothing. Just concrete.
There is a funky entrance to the Durham, I think, Public Library or something like that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful building.
All right, I have follow-up questions, but I'm not going to ask them yet.
Sure.
Thank you, Drew. Well, he already gave a little bit of it. Clearly, you went to school in Iowa.
Yeah. I was raised in Wheaton, suburb of Chicago.
I have been there.
We
have things to talk about, yes.
It's a great area. And then I made my way to Iowa State. Started in architecture. Did that for a few years. That's where we met each other. And about 2 years in, realized it was not for me.
Okay, that was already one of my questions. I was
did
like,
not
they met
go
in architect school, but yet Drew is not one.
He dropped out. He couldn't cut it.
I have better things. Yeah. So I went business, right?
Okay.
That's the better thing.
Yes. And you're still in it, so you still appreciate it.
Yes.
Clearly, it's your business that you founded, but it's just...
Yep.
You're not sketching out.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm not the technical expert in the business.
It takes
I help put it all together from the financials and operations. And so I ended up going into finance for a while, worked at PNC Bank, and then here at Self Help in Durham for a couple of years. And really just kind of enjoyed that side. Got a chance to meet a lot of entrepreneurs while I was working in finance and kind of realized like this is something that I felt like we could do. And we had been talking for a while to want to start a business that had kind of a mission and an impact. And as I was peeling back the curtain into what entrepreneurship was in my finance career, I was like, I think we can probably take something like this on. It's been a bumpy ride. Doing it versus seeing other people doing it is definitely different.
Yes.
But it's been really, really enjoyable and very rewarding to see some of the things that we kind of sought to achieve start to come to fruition.
I'll say, so when we first met each other, we were at the Hope Renovations annual, it was a celebration, holiday party, it was something. Mm-hmm. We met an event, I think Zach and I met in the hallway because we were both looking for the bathroom.
Correct.
And oversharing there, but if you don't mind oversharing a tiny bit, but I didn't just meet you, I had the honor of also meeting, you both have beautiful wives, and you both have large families, and you are younger people, just relative to how many kids you have. Even. All right, well, so feel free to give a shout out to your wives, but then collectively, how many children do you have?
Sure, I'll start. Also, I want to take this opportunity.
Yes.
Just to considering the context, I also have an MBA from UNC.
Oh, wow.
So also a UNC alum.
UNC,
I wanted to
shout
bring
out.
That back.
Yes, we. You kind of need to, considering it's 5 minutes away. So.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, and
nice.
I loved it. It was great.
Just say
great
anything
experience.
Else about that.
What? Well, because I taught there. I had an adjunct appointment with the... I don't think we were... You didn't take... Did I? Did you take one of my classes?
I think we
figured that out, but you weren't... Did I grade you? So your shout out to your partners.
Yeah.
Not
so,
this partner, your other partner.
Yeah. So my real wife, not my work wife. I'm also his work wife.
Yes.
Yeah, mutual there. But so my... wife Emily, so we met at Iowa State as well, so also in the design school. She's a graphic designer. So we've been married for almost 11 years now. And we do have 4 children. At one point in time, we had 4 kids, 5 and under. Their ages now are 8, 6, 5, and 3.
Better.
3 boys and a girl.
Better.
Yeah.
Where's a drink? Better.
I know, right? This is your, so work is your vacation.
That's right. It's a nice break.
Mm-hmm. All right. And I got to meet her. Lovely, lovely. And then Drew, your partner, your other wife.
Yeah. Also met at Iowa State. So we met our wives around the same time. And she was studying education, early childhood education. Mm-hmm. So we've had three kids. Mm-hmm. We've been married for 12 years. They're all girls. So he's got boys, I've got girls, which is always fun to compare.
I didn't realize yours were all boys. I come from an all-girl family, so I didn't realize all four.
Three boys and then a girl.
Okay, yes. Got it.
He ended up getting one in there. But I have all girls. They are 10, 8, and 6.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was so fun. So we got to talking, and their wives, again, we all found the bathroom, and their wives were there, and then there was a comment about have to get home with the kids, and then they're like, yeah, we have seven kids. There were seven kids, and I was like, that's a lot of kids. That's wonderful. So, and when you said you came out here together, I was like, wait, you didn't just come, the two of you. There were other people with you. So yes. That's one. We're a family show here. Mm-hmm. We've had a husband and wife on the show, not at the same time. We introduced both the positive approach to care and the snow approach. We had Amanda on one show and Dan on the other. So we haven't had a husband and wife together on the microphone.
Because the other man, the husband sat in the back, remember?
Mm. Oh, that's right. That's right. Twice we've had a guest and their spouse was listening. That is true. So we have had at least a husband and wife whose husbands are never coming on the show. Our husbands.
Never.
Never. They don't even listen to the show.
And never say never, never, but he's never.
We can say whatever we want. Okay, so going back. So you, I love the story about how you all met. And so first tell us more about the design build. Tell us more about Haven, and then we're going to kind of get into the bigger pictures. But how do you work? I know I said it really quickly in the introduction, but tell us about your elevator pitch. How do you talk about what you do?
Yeah, I'll try to tailor fit it to this conversation today, but I'll leap in there, and I'm sure Drew will have some additional comments. So, you know, we originally started Haven with the intent to just see more affordable housing, right? So I, as an architect, was working a lot on the kind of developer-led multifamily projects, and affordable housing was just this enigma. It wasn't being created. There's a big growing demand for it, growing need for it. And I was looking at the industry saying, I don't understand this enough. I need to understand this better. And so we started diving into that. And as we understood it more, we started understanding some of the constraints that were keeping it from happening. And so that's where we thought and have been implementing the idea of design build as an approach to really control some of the risk in the project. So design build is good. It's a good project delivery method for any project, but our application to the housing world, it is intentional, is by design, if you will. So the big difference here is most projects, right, are delivered where you get an architect and then they design something, they get bid out, and then a builder comes in later, right?
Thus the term that you're about to say. Yes, and that, okay.
Right, and so alternatively, this is just architect, builder on the same team, in the same office, one company. That's the big difference.
Mm. Why is it called design build and not design and build? Because I realized I was doing it just to be clarity, but that's a cool kid's term, design build. I don't know why I'm hesitant. It means something.
Because they're younger. I'm 65. I would say design and build, but they got to go with the flow.
We are designing and building, so you're not inaccurate, right? That's a very accurate way of saying it. Design build is a alternative to something called design bid build. So I won't get too into the weeds.
Oh, okay. Because I know I've heard others use that term. So it's like it's a term, and it's because other people, you have an architect, they design it, and then you bid it out to someone, and then you bring the builder in. So
correct.
It's all in-house with you.
So design build is saying, hey, they're trying to compare that to that traditional approach.
Okay.
So that's why design build is the project delivery method. It doesn't really make a huge difference. It's kind of all, you understand, you say design and build.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true. We're doing the same thing.
Well, and I went, and feel free, Drew, to interrupt me. I went into like this little specific thing about the word and, but I'm really glad that you've used the word a few times, affordable. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, can we take a moment? Because and we had talked a little bit beforehand or emailed about some of the questions, and the word affordable wasn't in there. So I'm so glad you brought it out, because I know even from when we first met, that's such an important part of your company and your approach. For our listeners, because that word is a contentious word in itself, or challenging, or an unclear word, how do you design How do you describe the word affordable? And how do you use it in a sentence? Because affordable housing is different than housing that's more affordable.
Exactly. And applying it to me, applying it to the different counties that you are exposed to.
Yeah, so I have a nerdy answer, if you want the nerdy answer.
There's a true definition.
We've got some minutes here, so yeah, okay.
Right? So there's the HUD definition of housing affordability is taking a look at how much of your income goes towards housing, right? So mm-hmm. it'd say by definition, someone who's spending 30% or more of their income towards housing, just in their monthly budget, mm-hmm. right? They are housing cost burdened.
Yeah.
And then if they're spending more than 50%, it's kind of severely housing cost burdened. Mm-hmm. And so theoretically, if you want to say, hey, this is affordable housing, you look at who is paying for that housing, how much of their income is going towards it. And so when we're looking at income, we generally are using the term AMI, mm-hmm. area median income. Mm-hmm. This is a county by county mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. census tract by census tract. I can't mm-hmm. remember. Mm-hmm. It's one of the two. And what that is looking at is saying, what's the median income? And so not, it's kind of like average, but not exactly. And says for a household of one person, two person, three, four, five, six, right? And it says, here's an income range for 30, 60, 80, mm-hmm. 100, 120% of that median income. And so you'll look at the industry and you'll say, hey, affordable housing, cool, what does that mean? Well, hey, are we serving people that are experiencing homelessness? Are we serving seniors? Are we serving workforce housing? Are we serving this or that? And so it kind of depends on the project. There's different funding sources for different project types. So, but most of this does exist within the realm of multifamily housing, mm-hmm. which we do, mm-hmm. but you can actually apply similar approaches, maybe even sometimes similar funding to smaller scale housing. So for example, we're doing a mm-hmm. community of duplexes right now in Raleigh that mm-hmm. is mixed income. So that'll have some affordable mm-hmm. housing to it. You know, there's some folks that are working on doing tiny house villages, these sorts of things where it's not just the multifamily side, although that's usually where this conversation exists, is the bigger stuff.
I think kind of bringing it back maybe to the multi-generational households and mm-hmm. single family side, the affordability conversation looks a lot different. Mm-hmm. I think one of them, kind of part of the reason why we've created the design build model is that you can not necessarily make things more affordable in that like they're costing more mm-hmm. affordably, but that you can streamline the process and like time is money, right? And so you can actually save money on the process side of it. And in addition, since the GC side is in-house, we can provide exact details to like what the actual thing is going to cost. So you can start making what I call budget-informed design decisions. Mm-hmm.
Ooh,
so
like
if
that.
We're working with a family who's trying to create a ADU or extra space in their house for mm-hmm. parents who are trying to move there, you're not just like creating this design in a silo, putting it out to bid and hoping that it costs the right mm-hmm. amount. We're actually going to put the design together and very early on in the process actually put an estimate to it. And mm-hmm. now we're reviewing the estimate with the budget. And so there's an affordability because most projects die because you design something that you can't afford.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so what we're able to do is say, well, here's what it's going to cost. Let's try to change the design to make it affordable to you, like what you can afford.
And I'm glad you both of you clarified that. So yes, affordable can be your own personal thing. Well, what's affordable to me? Mm-hmm. And you know, anything less than I, you know, was planning on spending is more affordable. But I did actually, when I was a professor at Keenan, and we assigned the readings on, but what is technically affordable housing? Mm-hmm. And Zach did a great definition because I think you do see these words. I mean, even when you look at lower income housing and affordable housing in our county, so like super easy math would be what? So if the AMI, the what is it? What does that stand for again? Median income.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
What's the A stand for?
Area.
Oh, area. So if I have to do easy math. If the area median income was 30,000, then if you can't spend more than 10,000 on your housing, or else then your mm-hmm. cost burden, because mm-hmm. that would be.
And that's 100% AMI. So
100%
then, what
AMI,
you could say is 60% AMI would be 60% of that 30,000, which now the math starts getting kind of confusing.
Yeah, you're
But then now we're looking at a smaller
20,
amount.
20,000. So then it would be then whatever. I really thought about that for a moment. What's one third of 30?
It's six but, times so 18,000.
And I think that's important for our listeners that there's a way to really describe what's affordable mm-hmm. housing. But then there's and what's interesting is you're in that space. You're in both spaces.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I love that budget informed decision.
Design mm-hmm. decisions. Mm-hmm. Yes. Design decisions. Yeah. I think that's really the power of design build is that we can find solutions that fit the budget you're going
going for because we are so informed on what the actual cost is going to be because we have so much historical data. Where if you just hire an architect, typically, like, they can be very informed for sure. Architects are very informed. Oh, I'm sorry, I just offended Zach. But it's lacking that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And so with Orange County, because I'm on the affordable housing Orange County.
Oh, my gosh, how great. Excited are you? First of all, Alicia's on every board, you should know, and she's a volunteer with every organization. But I did not know that. We listed last week, our last week show was all about advocacy and activism. We listed all of our, we didn't even have affordable housing. Go on, friend, and ask your question.
So... We followed Orange County. They bid it, they built it, and it happened. Okay. We watched, and so we went to one in Durham. I'm not sure if you're familiar with, and we saw that. So
an affordable housing.
Affordable housing community.
Okay.
So now Orange County has, I think, two coming up in 2025. So determined by the county, the federal government, the funding is coming from where? That it's already been approved, and it's already about to happen. So,
sure. We could go on a very long tangent.
How long is this show again?
Yeah. I was thinking of some initials. What are the initials?
LIHTC. The Lihtc. Housing Tax Credits is one of many different sources. And
because what I'm hearing is it popping up everywhere.
Answer her.
You know, how are they were being approved and they're supposed to be everywhere, but they're not.
You know, they're just looking at each other, audience, like, who wants to tackle this one?
But generally, there are many different funding sources at many different levels. So there's federal funding sources, there's county, there's city.
State.
And every single one is different departments of funding. And each one has different requirements around how those projects should be. They're going to be looking at different things, like LIHTC is going to be looking at how close it is to the local grocery store and stuff like that. And so there's all these different constraints around all these different funding sources, and there's a lot of really great affordable housing developers out there.
Do all these fundings come together as one, or do you?
The affordable housing developers have to apply for each one. Mm. And so, like, we're part of one that we're a joint venture developer on. I think the capital stack was like 11 different funding sources to make this project happen. It's 192 units in
Raleigh. It's why things take forever.
And so that's why a lot of times it takes a while. And a lot of times you might get approved from one funding source, but then not approved from the other. And now you got to wait a year to apply for that next one for this one. So you get a property under contract or you buy it, and typically you're looking at multiple years of trying to just get the funding for it to finally have it happen. But then when it finally happens, because you've got all that capital stack, you have a lot less debt, and so you can actually justify charging a more affordable rate on it. And so it really does achieve its mission, but it does take a while.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and that's, you answered that. Thank you very much, because I wondered why it took so long.
Yeah, there's a lot of approval processes. And then just even the process of design build, right? You got to get your different levels of site approvals and the building approval from the city. And so just the actual process of getting the building permits to be able to do it takes a while.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I guess this is, we had talked a little bit before, shared some of the questions, and one of them was, what is happening with local cities in recent history around planning and zoning and, you know, what Alicia was getting into, these projects? I mean, how do you want to take that? You said I could ask about that, so what are you thinking about how this all means?
Yeah, I want to start because I am not as recently as educated on that as Drew is, so I think he'll add some flavor toward the end. It's kind of interesting as the communities around us are experiencing this crazy growth, right? Mm-hmm. And we try to hold a lot of generosity to our, not only our elected officials, but especially our staff at the city and at the county, because it's a huge undertaking what they're experiencing right now. It's you know, even if you expected it and planned for it, there's still going to be a lot of things happening that are really difficult infrastructure wise and investments in your community that you might not have known you needed. And so, but what we have seen is a lot of effort going into addressing some of the kind of key aspects of affordable housing or about housing generally. So that's, of course, what we're paying a lot of attention to. There's some other interesting things like City of Raleigh not having a parking minimum anymore in development on zones, right?
Like that's a huge issue. So listeners, if you geek out on these articles that I've read a lot of, and these guys have probably read a lot more, these are some of the things that actually inhibit a lot of innovation and affordability, because right? These parking, you know, someone said death by zoning laws, but go into the, what the, why that's so such a big deal.
Yeah, so I mean, parking is well, in some ways, the city is just passing the baton to the financing, the lenders, because they'll often require parking for their projects if they want to lend to it.
If you're doing a building and 20 people are going to live there, you got to make sure there's enough parking for 20 people.
That's even if the zoning doesn't require it. Yeah, so yes, that's sometimes true. But there's an interesting project in Raleigh. It's a city-owned land, and they want affordable housing on there. And they said, hey, we want to see no parking on this site, because we wanted to maximize the amount of units we can get. Like, that's kind of an interesting...
Oh, so then it will all be public transportation.
It's right downtown.
On-street parking?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on-street parking, and it's really close to downtown. I don't know what's going to come from that project. That was just, you know, kind of an interesting take that they had on it. That's kind of what's possible with that change. It's maybe not going to happen everywhere, but at least they're kind of making some of these opportunities a little bit more possible.
Interesting.
There's also changes around just like what you can do on a single family lot
that we've been seeing a lot of.
Where like it used to be all you can have is a house. Right. Well, now you can do a duplex or a duplex with an accessory dwelling unit or chop it up into four lots.
Is that
or
based
small
on the acreage?
Based on acreage, based on a lot of different variables. That's been another shift where it's like the city and the counties are trying to respond in a way to allow for more density, right? Mm-hmm. And so density could be like downtown, no parking requirements, but it's also just like any person out there who owns a piece of property can now add two units to the local city, or three units,
because,
or whatever it is.
And parking gets connected with it because, right, there was something about there's only so many car, though I'm thinking about all these people that have all these cars on their yards. But,
sure.
But yeah, there was something to, I remember reading an article, and it had, maybe because it had to do with street parking, if you were connected with the street park.
Yeah, I mean, I only brought up the parking thing as a sidebar anyways to say that there does seem to be a big movement towards this densification on the housing.
Yes.
And I think the goal is, and I think it's an admirable goal, but it's not a silver bullet, is to see more housing options come to the market, right? Mm-hmm. Part of it is just over the last decade or so, the production of housing in the country is just not kept up with the demand. There was a big dip, I think, in the 2010s, and now we're kind of back to what might be more considered normal, but we're not. But if we had a big dip, right, and then now we're producing an normal amount of housing, there's a large deficit that we're just not keeping up with, which is kind of what they're using, that data is what they're using to say, hey, this probably explains why housing prices
just
jumped
shot up
crazy amounts.
Supply-demand issue.
And so we're saying, hey, can we just produce new and different kinds of housing at a higher density? And that doesn't fit everywhere, but you see places like Durham, places like Raleigh, and in some ways places like Chapel Hill, Carrboro, trying to say, hey, let's just try to get out of the way at least a little bit without sacrificing what's good in the community. Let's try to see new housing options be available, actually able to even just do them. So a big one, what was it, maybe 4 years ago at this point, accessory dwelling units, right?
Yeah, I was like, we've now said it two or three times, and that was a question. Tell everyone, what's an accessory dwelling unit, or an ADU as lovingly known?
Yeah, so there's kind of multiple different ways that you can do an accessory dwelling unit. You've got the detached accessory dwelling unit, which is, these are almost always on a single family home lot. Mm-hmm. And so you could do essentially another house, a small house behind your house, that would be a detached accessory dwelling unit.
Like some people already have sheds, and but those aren't, those classified as accessory?
Those are accessory structures.
Because they're not dwelling.
And yes, so they're not dwelling. You're missing the dwelling component, and those can be converted oftentimes into accessory dwelling. We're doing a few of those right now, where if you have a structure already back there, we can turn it into a dwelling. But a lot of times it's a new structure that you're adding. Mm-hmm. And so you're going into it thinking, I'm going to add this, typically somewhere between 400 to 800 square feet, sometimes higher depending on the jurisdiction.
Kind of like the tiny homes. You're building a tiny home and in-law suites.
Yep.
There are the ones that you can buy, granny pods. We don't love the term, but that's literally what they're called. So, but laws had to be passed to allow that.
Yeah, and so there's actually three other types of accessory dwelling units, or at least two. I think there's three total. So there's also ones that are attached. So you have a detached accessory dwelling unit. You can also do an attached accessory dwelling unit, which in effect is turning your single-family home into a duplex. But
it's kind of like adding another wing, adding another.
But with like a separate entrance, separate kitchen, separate everything, so that can actually be a separate dwelling unit. And then you can actually do an accessory dwelling unit inside of a structure. And so like a basement conversion into an accessory dwelling unit is often a type where you're just taking a current structure. And we've done a few of those as well.
And we have that. We are a college town, and which is also why we had some of the strictest. Going back to brothel laws, but we had some of the strictest zoning. But so you have some people who do have those basement apartments, but in order for it to be like legit, right, it has to have exits and entrances and kitchens. But so you can, is that what it is, sort of turning a place that has a space that I'd never heard the term an ADU within the house because it's like converting a basement or something like that? Or it wouldn't be an attic. Oh, the only way it could be an attic is if there's their own
stairs. Yes. Yeah, so there's a lot of different ways to put it together, but ultimately it means you're adding a separate unit to your single family property. And oftentimes, I would say
or probably duplex in Durham.
That's true. In Durham, you can add an ADU to a duplex as well. So you're creating three units on that property.
A triplex. And these were not, I mean, some people would say, well, what's the big deal? Can't you just build it on your own own property? And it was a big deal. Like, I remember it had to be passed. I can't remember, but here in Orange County, that ADUs were allowed.
Yeah,
right?
it was not a common thing until more recently as like just a more widely acceptable option.
Yeah, I don't think it was intentionally being shut down, although maybe it's possible. I think generally it's just that the requirements on your lots just were restrictive enough that it just wasn't
it's hard to find.
It just wasn't able, whether it's the size of your lot as a minimum or these sorts of things.
Right.
And so, you know, I think right now, there's sometimes hang-ups with HOAs, so communities can have even more restrictive
homeowners
covenants.
Homeowners associations.
Yeah. They have something called a restrictive covenant, just says, hey, you can do this and that. But city-wise, most cities, most municipalities are saying, hey, let's just get out of the way and let homeowners do this or developers do this a little bit more than they had been in the past.
And last week's show was on advocacy. And as I understand it, because there was pushback from people in the community, like, hey, and it goes into aging and it goes into multi-generational. Like, I want my family member to be able to live with me. I own this property. I'm able to do it. Oh, sorry. Why? And so there was this real push to allow more innovation and also to make it more affordable for folks. And so that was like really a lot of advocacy that happened. I remember these articles that were really pushing. And this was like one of the first things that they said, look, you want more affordable housing, right? Like, stop with the ADU issues.
Yeah, I think it was definitely driven by folks in the community, whether they're small scale developers or homeowners, people who wanted to see this happen, which is great because they've seen a lot of a lot of what they were trying to achieve or accomplish, they saw it through.
So other trends, because I'm thinking, so density, and should we define density? Drew, how would you define density for folk? I mean, in case it's not self-evident.
Number of units per acre.
Yeah.
Like how many units you can fit onto a single piece of land.
And again, it's not necessarily right for everywhere, right?
Right,
I mean, that's not to say that that's good in and of itself. It's not a silver bullet. It's not the only way a community can come together. But it can be good for some communities, and that's what they're trying to do, is just allow that to happen in the right places. And so that's not to say there's, you know, neighborhood protection overlays. So there's historic protection overlays. There's places where that's just simply not allowed because the nature of the place just wouldn't be good for it. And so certainly none of these things are perfect. But it is more complicated than just saying, you know, everyone's going to now be forced to live in communities where there's three units per tenth of an acre or anything like that. Like, there will be more of that, especially as our cities continue to just go crazy with population. But it's not going to be necessarily every house everywhere.
Yeah, and there'll be some, and I've already heard it, and in this community, in terms of, you know, what communities are more rural, what communities are more agricultural, and so let's. So I appreciate where there's complexity. So there's the density issue. Sorry, I'm moving in my seat. There's complexity issue. There's ADUs, not complex, density issues, ADUs, other trends. You talk about parking, other things that you're seeing in the space that speak to either innovation or affordability or things that people are coming to you and saying, funny, multi-generational is how housing used to be all the time, but now there's, I think, a more intentionality in that.
Yeah, I would love to. I think that's kind of the big thing what drew me to this conversation. Mm-hmm. I think there's other things we can talk about, but this multi-generational household. Yeah, I was just kind of looking at some stats online as well about this, but seeing that it reflects our experience, which is a lot of what we're seeing in the market for the work that we do, especially on the single family side, is with multi-generational households. So, I mean, the vast majority of our accessory dwelling units, whether they're standalone, so it might be, hey, somebody bought a house and before they move in it, they do an ADU, or we've done a custom house, a couple custom houses with ADUs in them, accessory dwelling units in them, and the vast majorities are for multi-generational households. So it's usually three generations. I don't think we've had anybody who's like four generations. Mm-hmm. But it does seem to be, in some ways, reflective of a consciousness or an understanding of the benefits of it. Mm-hmm. I also think, in part, it's just like how you pay for it, honestly. Right. It makes it a lot more, because accessory dwelling units have been historically very challenging to pay for, so that the people who are able to have two generations of income or of wealth to be able to mm-hmm. afford them, mm-hmm. it's a lot easier. And so, of course, then our statistics, like our experience, is biased towards that population because it's available, right? Mm-hmm. So so that's very likely, but it is something that we're seeing a lot of.
Yeah, I live in one, so you should come see our fun, cool house. Nice. We did not design it. The previous owners did, and it was created for three generations to live together. And I don't know, it wouldn't be called an attached. I think it's the ADU within an mm-hmm. ADU.
I don't know.
Integrated. So you'll come over and see it and just say, what is this? But this is what you're talking about. It was created for parents and grandparents and grandchildren to all live together but have their separate spaces. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so other trends, because I didn't mean to kind of take you off that, in terms of what you're seeing that people are really interested in or that you're kind of excited about.
I think there's trends more on, like, once we get into the nuances of the designs that we're creating, we're seeing specific things around, like, the architectural components. I know there's, like, universal design is something that mm-hmm. you hear more often now, which is putting the single, like, one of the bedrooms on the first floor so that you can age well there.
Yes.
And those types of trends that we're seeing a lot of that's coming to us. Like, we're not like pushing it onto the market, but people are saying, I want to make sure.
No, you should push it out on the market. That's a whole other conversation that those of us in the aging space are really pushing that. Because I hear, sorry, I'm stopping you. Because I am. I don't know. Because I hear this push-pull. We're asking designers and builders, why aren't you making more mm-hmm. age-friendly homes? And sure. we'll steer the conversation there.
But they
and
have like, the well, elevators now.
We're waiting for the...
That's what they're putting in.
But we're waiting for the customers to ask for it. And so it's like, well, where... Because at some point, everyone's like, hey, that's great to have a main bedroom on the main floor, and yet how does it come? So anyway, so this push-pull is we're going to have a whole other show.
What about the elevators
that
they're putting in everywhere? I've seen a lot of
them. If you can afford them, that's
a great
option.
But I was like, that's a chunk of change.
That's not going to be like a itemized
budget-informed design decision. We can tell you how much it'll cost, but
isn't it like 15,000? 10 to 50,000?
Yeah, 10 to 50 seems about right.
Yeah, so just put the main bedroom
on the first floor.
Or even better yet, like, hello, resurgence of ranch homes. My home's all one floor, except for then there's a basement. But yeah, okay, keep going.
Just to clarify, so we don't do like stock home building, spec home building, and so we're not just like putting homes into the market. We've done a few of those, and
people
all of those
come to you.
We have included a bedroom on the first floor, so when we have the opportunity, we make sure to do it. Just
see,
because
he's coming
because
I was like, what?
But
you should just
custom, what I'm saying custom. Is more the clients that are coming to us, since we're doing custom design build,
exactly.
is they're realizing the importance of these things, and they're telling us this is
Got
what
it.
We'd like to see in the design.
Yeah, I'll interject just to say also, you know, like I said, I'm a huge building nerd. I'm still being educated by our customers and our clients, especially when we're on this topic of aging well, right? And
I know. Oh, good. I'm glad.
Oh, yeah.
And I gave you a hard time.
Sure.
About doing stuff.
There's this aspect of, you know, we are designing from our experience, and the more of these customers, these clients that we get to work with, we're learning from them, and we're learning about what they value and what their life experience is like, and that allows us to refine how we're designing, mm-hmm. and we're learning every single time we do this work. And so I think what Drew's illustrating is that we've been learning this over time, working with lots and lots of different customers, and saying, and instilling that value then into our future work.
Mm-hmm.
And so saying, hey, if we're going to have a standard, you know, we want that standard to be thinking about what we always tell our customers. This is very obvious when you hear it, but it's never, at least in our experience, it isn't usually vocalized, is that we're building a structure that's going to last generations.
Right.
Structure itself is going to be a multi-generation. It's going to last generations. An investment that's going to be, hopefully if we build it right, 100 plus years, right? It's going to go beyond the person who built it. And so let's realize that this thing is going to have a life of its own. Mm-hmm. And that life might be, multiple generations mm-hmm. in your family mm-hmm. or might be many families. Who knows? But let's think about the whole life cycle of this space. Let's make it as adaptable. And so, you know, universal design is more about let's lower the barriers mm-hmm. to using the space well. You can use universal design in a house. But you can use it in a library. You can use it in a mm-hmm. restaurant. Mm-hmm. So universal design is saying let's lower these barriers for as many people as possible to use this space because it's the most adaptable. It has the most opportunities to be successful. Right? It has the lowest risk.
It's livable for everyone.
I had a custom house built by an architect that I worked with, and it was interesting because I had to bring out of my mind, which I have many of, to that architect. And, you know, he was very good, and he was able to get to the point, maybe the first drawing and a half. Hmm. But I did understand when you're doing it how the changes to make it, because my husband is 90, so I had to make it for me and for him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, I thought about the longevity of it as well, meaning I always say, well, they can do that after me because I set it up for them to have the entrance on the, you know, the separate entrance and the upstairs mm-hmm. and all that. So mm-hmm. I say that because, you know, when you're doing the house building thing, you think, you know, some of the places where they just cut them out mm-hmm. versus customize it, you know, mm-hmm. them to the individual to make it forever. Mm. Like that house is going to be there forever.
Well, and I liked your point about how the house goes for generations, but to what Alicia was saying, that it goes for generations and or phases within your own life.
Absolutely.
And
I'll send you our show, and I wish I don't have it in front of me, but we did now put numbers to our episodes when we mm-hmm. had Esther Greenhouse on. And Esther is a environmental gerontologist and does mm-hmm. a lot in the design space and talked a lot about that whole show is all about universal space. Design and mm-hmm. accessible design, and about how most homes, most places, spaces are designed for, you know, 40-year-olds,
right.
people between 20 and 40 who are, you know, 5'10", and
because you come to my house and my cupboards are like up here, and everybody like Heather would come in and be like, wow, what's up with your cupboards?
But that if we were just to design the houses and the spaces from beginning to be more accessible mm-hmm. and usable for everyone, then people wouldn't have to move. Look, I spent all morning touring assisted livings. if the houses throughout your own phases, because when people, a lot of times they're getting their houses and they, you know, look at you with young kids. So you think about yourself with four kids right. and you're young and da da da. But I don't know. You know, not enough people are saying, hey, will I be able, and more you're seeing it though.
To grow.
Mm-hmm. Am I going to be able to age in this mm-hmm. home? And then, and that's where you all come in with your growing expertise of saying, hey, if you really want to stay in this house and bring generations, right, this is where we do talk about bedrooms on the main floor and zero, my big thing, you know, that I learned about is the zero entrance, mm. you know, so you don't have to put up these really intense, not as pretty ramps, but mm-hmm. just be able to have.
And what's interesting about that is that there's a building science solution to that
yes.
that is more complicated than you might think on face value. You have to be able to construct the building mm-hmm. to be able to accommodate that, which actually
is more. Oh yeah,
because
there's like a drainage and there's and you got to build up the land. Oh no, I know it. I have when yeah. I heard it. You got to put dirt down in a different way.
And that's where I'm saying you start learning, you start adopting mm-hmm. these standards, you start saying like, hey. We're learning on what of these outcomes we're trying to achieve. Let's build to our expertise. Let's build our standards. Let's build our the way we do our work towards these.
And then kind of just to take that complicated, the zero entry on that mm-hmm. piece, like a really, really simple one is just every time we're doing a shower, let's put in an extra blocking for hand bars in the future.
Yes.
Right? Like it takes
for my
2 seconds when
apartment,
that's open.
That's what we said when they please do that. Just put it in from the beginning.
And so that's just kind of starts to become standard practice now where it's even if we're designing for a 30-year-old mm-hmm. custom home, like let's just throw up some blocking while we're in there before
exactly.
we get
that makes
going.
A
so
big
that
difference.
Who knows who buys it in the future,
exactly.
they have the ability to put that in. And so, like, that's a takes 2 seconds. It costs almost nothing, but it's these types of subtle practices that we're trying to introduce. Some very complicated, like how are we going to make the foundation fit with the ground level? Mm-hmm. Some are very simple, like that we're just trying to.
And
implement.
Others, you can still have that beautiful front with front steps going up in a patio, but maybe that around entrance back. Will make more sense around back. Mm-hmm. But just that there's some area where someone can go in. I'm making Zach look at. But so other things, because I know we have. We have a few minutes left, and so I do want to dive into this sort of even go further, because we are the Aging Well Together show. Other issues around what aging well means for, is it the people who come to you? So is it generally individuals like me coming to you? Is it a town coming to you? Is it, you know, what kind of organizations coming to you? Because like you mentioned, you were at Self-Help, so I'm thinking of other. Okay, I'll just stop there.
We have had the benefit. I mean, this is one of those things where you look back and you say, man, we're actually doing the work of what we set out to do when we started this business, which is just an amazing outcome, better than I could have imagined. So we have the great opportunity to work with lots of homeowners, just whether it's couples or individuals, families, but also lots of organizations. So lots of community organizations that do work with people experiencing homelessness or even some, you know, affordable housing developers. So it sort of runs the gamut. Often on those larger projects, the town or the city or the county or the state, they're partners in those projects. So we've been able to work with sort of all aspects.
And on the aging well side, I would say the majority are on the single family. Oftentimes it's either the child or the parent that reaches out and says, hey, we saw that you guys are doing accessory dwelling units, or we've heard that you guys are in the space, or we saw you on an ARP article.
Or heard you on the Aging Well Together show.
That's right. And so they reach out, and then we get to kind of utilize the amount of expertise that we've accumulated by now to kind of help inform their decision. And oftentimes they always bring some new ideas as well. But a lot of times they're either the parent or the child that's reaching out and says, I have this piece of property and I want to make it work for my family. What can I do? And a lot of times even they say, I have this amount of money available. And since we're a design build, we're able to say, okay, well, we can make that work at this scale. And then we start to try to find a solution for them.
So when you first started your company, if I heard right, makes sense. So I think you were thinking it was more about the affordability of homes. My question is, have you found that you're doing more in the aging space now? And so how has that changed how you're addressing?
So what I think is actually pretty unique on that question is that every time we do an ADU for a parent who's looking for a housing solution, we're taking a little pressure off the market for affordable housing, because they're going to be going somewhere elsewhere. That's right. And so there's actually an indirect way in which it is actually impacting affordable housing. And so I would say we've always kind of thought that there was never a silver bullet to solve affordable housing. There is a wide variety of solutions ranging from single family all the way up to 200 unit apartment complex. And we want to kind of engage all of it. And so our response is more kind of just getting pulled into the market where we see fit. And that's really across the gamut, as you're saying. So I wouldn't say that they necessarily conflict each other.
They kind of
support one another. Right. And we like to touch all sides of the projects.
And I think I was getting to how have you it wasn't about affordability versus aging. It was actually getting to the question, how have you changed your design and construction as you think more about aging And so
I guess I was thinking, does this allow the customer to stay in their own home by making it accessible for them because of what you can supply to, say, for me, you can come and make my house so that it is...
And you don't need to leave.
I don't have to go to the assisted living.
Help you find a great one.
I just had a conversation with somebody like last week about that. They reached out and said, we're thinking about doing an addition. We want to age here for as long as possible, and here's the scope and here's why. And so that is also a very applicable solution. That was more not an ADU or a second unit. It was just doing an addition to their house to make it more functional to them, add a bedroom on the first floor.
Or make sure that everything in the home can be either
accessible.
Blocked. That's working well, because a lot of people don't realize that they could stay home. You know, the option is go to.
I mean, lots of things where they're building spaces for a caregiver to live. You know, that's a whole other conversation about isolation and loneliness, and so making sure there's connections. So you have 2 minutes left. So I want to make sure when I know you were super excited, or you should have been super excited to come on the Aging Well Together show, and I want to make sure, are there other trends or issues or things about your approach that would be helpful to share when it comes to aging well and your work? Or what do you wish people knew more of or about?
Man, I feel like we could talk
They'll come back again in 2025.
Because I think, you know, we're learning as we do this work. And I think I really appreciate the partners that come in and the clients that come in with unique and creative needs. And as we do more of that work, we learn. I think one of the things that the industry at large and consumers specifically are paying more attention to, and I really think this is an important next kind of aspect of the industry at large, but that our company, we pay a lot of attention to, is health, the health of buildings, the health of spaces. There's a lot lacking in the materials that are being used, from like toxicity.
I know, it's like asbestos, iron paint, or lead paint.
Yeah, we think we're past it, right? Oh, we don't do lead paint anymore. No, we're doing some building practices in standard, like code compliant construction that's really not healthy for folks. And so even to the point of indoor air quality and bringing in good, healthy air, our HVAC systems.
Well, that's come up a lot through COVID.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And that might be
that
the filtering and things
that
like that.
That we all get.
And we're in a cold studio, so issues of, you know, right, like energy efficiency or something.
I mean, even to the point, especially in our area, of like humidity and how humidity plays with our heating and cooling and mold. And there's just buildings are complex. And we want to make sure we're creating healthy environments. And I think we don't all have to be experts in that. That's why you hire an expert. But people are paying more and more attention. I think that's really important as we move forward. And that's where I think the conversation, let's not only make sure that you can age well here, but let's make sure you stay healthy as you age in this space.
We're going to have, this is a teaser show.
I know.
I'm already thinking, and this is what we do sometimes. We're definitely going to do this in about 30 seconds when we go off the air and start thinking of other topics that we can dive into, because we're so excited to invite back Zach Sunderland and Drew Helm from Haven Design Build. This was so interesting that, you just left us on a cliffhanger of, already two or three more conversations. So I really do hope you both come back in 2025 and let's dive into some of these topics. But for now, we do have to end our Aging Well Together show. Really, guys, gentlemen, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Alicia, thank you.
Hey, thanks,
To our wonderful WCOM family, thank you for having us on WCOM LP Chapel Hill Carrboro 103.5 FM. Thank you, Orange County Department on Aging, for sponsoring us. And always, listeners, thank you for joining us. Take care, and we will talk more next week. We'll be right back.